This is Theater Royal. Tonight's play is the fifth in the important series of Command Performances, transcribed for your pleasure by the greatest stars of the English theater and their distinguished host, Sir Laurence Olivier. Tonight's guest, Trevor Howard. The play, The Judgment by Dostoevsky.
The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theater Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Once again, it is my pleasure to introduce to you a guest from the theater who is going to appear in this week's program. Next week, incidentally, I look forward to taking over the leading roles myself in this series. Today's guest will, I feel sure, be already familiar to you through the many films he has made which have enjoyed success in the United States. I refer to such motion pictures as The Golden Salamander, The Third Man, and perhaps best known of all, Brief Encounter. He is, of course, Trevor Howard. He has chosen to play the role of John Farrington in our play, based on a work by Dostoevsky. It's called The Judgment. Here, then, is Trevor Howard as John Farrington in The Judgment.
My name is John Farrington, Dr. John Farrington. If you'd care to sit down for a moment or two, I'll tell you a story. It's a fantastic story. You won't believe it. No one ever believes the truth. Would you like to hear it? Very well, then, but I warn you, this isn't an ordinary story, and you can't listen to it in the ordinary way. You'll have to pay attention, and you'll have to think. Yes, think. That's a surprisingly difficult thing to do. You don't have to believe that either, do you? Well, consider. Do you think as you go about your normal everyday duties? Are you conscious of thinking when you eat, walk, bathe, or dress? No, of course you're not. You perform 90% of all your actions without actually thinking. How do I know? Well, you see, I'm a psychiatrist. I specialize in the study of the brain. My business is thought. I said I was going to tell you a story. Yes, it's a peculiar kind of story. You see, I only know how it begins. I don't know the ending. However, if you'd like to listen, I'll tell you the beginning. Then perhaps you'll tell me the ending.
Good evening, John.
Carol.
Come in. Jim will be down in a minute.
I'm a bit early, I'm afraid.
No, Jim was late, held up at the office. Come into the living room.
Real wood fire. New curtains, too, I see. Oh,
that's most observant of you, John. Most men don't notice things. Changes about the house, I mean. Sit down in the easy chair. You look tired.
I am, a little.
You've been working too hard again.
Yes, I'm afraid I have.
When are you going to take that vacation you've been talking about?
Oh, one day I'll get around to it. There's so much to be done, Carol. So much I want to learn.
Learn? You? Why, you've practically an international reputation now.
I've only scratched the surface, Carol. The brain is a complex thing. We've
got... Oh, no, you don't. You've promised to come over this evening for dinner and to relax. I refuse to talk about your work.
You're quite right, my dear. You always did know what was right for me. Come to think of it, I always talked about my work when we were together. I never got around to talking about you.
That's right. And it wasn't very pleasing to a girl's vanity.
Well, I was very foolish, Carol. I should never have let you marry Jim.
Why, John, don't tell me you've been a secret admirer all these years.
Would that surprise you?
In a way. I've always thought you were married to your work.
I am, but I love you, Carol. I've always loved you.
Hi there, John. Carol, dear. Hey, what is this? Why are you two staring at each other like that?
Hmm? Oh, nothing, dear. John has just told me something that was a bit of a shock.
Really? None of your experiments, John. I thought you weren't going to discuss professional matters tonight.
We're not. I'm sorry, Carol.
How about some wine before dinner?
It's there on the table, dear. I'll serve it.
Yeah, you look a little tired. You're working too hard again?
Yes, Carol mentioned it. I don't suppose you could both be wrong.
How about letting a businessman prescribe for the doctor?
Of course. What's your diagnosis?
Too many clinics, too many patients, too much insanity.
Oh, no, that's not a pleasant word, Jim. We psychiatrists do not recognize what the layman terms insanity. My patients are mentally ill. Mental illness can be cured, just the same as physical illness.
I forbid it. I absolutely forbid it. We are not going to talk shop with John tonight. Here's the wine, dear. Hold the glass while I pour.
Thanks.
John?
Thank you.
Why, John, what's the matter?
I don't know. It's strange. The glass, it slipped from my hand. For a moment, I had no feeling in my fingers. That was the beginning, the first of the incidents. Then other things began to happen, most of them little things, minor slips. I couldn't be sure whether they were noticed or not. People not familiar with psychosis symptoms tend to discount minor changes. They call them idiosyncrasies.
Come in.
Oh, I beg your pardon, nurse, but I seem to have misplaced my treatise on the inner brain. I thought perhaps you might have come across it.
Why, certainly, Doctor. You gave it me to read yesterday.
Hmm? Oh, of course I did. How stupid of me.
I haven't quite finished it, but if you need it...
Oh, no, that's quite all right. Finish it, by all means.
Thank you. Oh, Doctor.
Yes?
I was a little puzzled by certain statements in the opening paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that, well, if what you say is true, then it's almost impossible to determine whether a person is suffering from mental derangement or not.
Yes, that unfortunately is one of my conclusions, but then my work is not finished. There's so much more we must learn. I'm certain the nurse looked at me strangely as I left the room. And then as the days and weeks went by, I was convinced that my little slips were not being ignored. One day in the hospital, I overheard two of my colleagues talking about it.
How's it going, Carl?
Oh, very well, Brad. I heard some fine things about your last operation. They said it was positively brilliant.
Oh, more luck than anything else, I think. I say, by the way, have you seen much of Farrington lately?
No, not much. Well, I run into him around the wards occasionally. Why?
I'm worried about him. He's been acting very strangely. Yesterday we met on the street and had a long chat. Oh, close to half an hour, I should say. This morning I met him in the corridor, and he seemed to have no recollection of the meeting or the conversation.
Really? That doesn't sound too good. He's working too hard. Perhaps we should ask Sibo to have a look at him. In a subtle way, of course.
Yeah, might not be a bad idea. Farrington has a brilliant mind, and sometimes that kind of mind can...
Yes, I know.
Brad?
I want to have a word with you.
Anything serious?
I hope not. It's about Farrington.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to Carl yesterday. We both agreed that he's not well.
Overwork, eh?
Precisely.
And, what do you want me to do about it?
Well, you're an old friend of his and his senior here in the hospital. If you put it to him, tactfully, of course, that his colleagues can't help noticing these lapses, or perhaps I should say symptoms... Symptoms he mustn't ignore.
Then suppose he tells me to go to the devil. Well, he's perfectly capable of doing that.
Well, in that case, we'll have to talk to Dr. Sibo. But first, have a word with him yourself.
Very well. I'll speak to him today.
After that, there was no longer any doubt in my mind. But I kept on. I was in the middle of a great experiment. I dared not stop now. My treatise, The Inner Brain, created great comment, and the local medical society wished to pay its respects to my work, so they gave me a banquet. I suspected that afterward the doctors would broach the subject of a rest, a short leave of absence. Sibo was there, observing me closely.
Gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to you our honored guest, Dr. John Farrington.
Gentlemen, friends and colleagues, I I can't begin to tell you how deeply moved I am at this magnificent gesture. We of the medical profession do not seek honor, only knowledge. And all of you here have made contributions to medicine and science. Only the future shall prove just how great those contributions are. As you know, I've chosen the brain. It's a fascinating subject, one that we know so little about. We are like babes in the woods, wandering in a maze of minute, complex circuits, which in their own unknown way cause us to think, to memorize and retain what we've learned, to speak distinctly, walk straight, to balance ourselves on a bicycle or in an airplane. It's not too strange, too difficult to conceive that if but one, just one small part of this complicated machinery ceases to function in the normal way, our entire thought process becomes jumbled and plays tricks on us. For example, if only...
What's happening to him?
He's breaking everything. John, what are you doing?
Stop it! The spider, don't you see?
John, grab him, someone!
Let me go! It's the spider! Kill it! Kill it!
John, wait!
Stop him! He's going that way! Paddington, come back! Come back, man!
What did he say? He said he had to kill a spider, pounding on the table, breaking everything with his bare fists.
But there was no spider on the table.
No, there wasn't.
But how awful!
I ran out of the banquet hall before they could stop me. I didn't take the car. I walked and ran, half stumbled. People stopped and stared at me, but no one approached me. I think they must have been too afraid. But finally, I was there. I stopped for a moment outside and looked at the house. They were in there. I knew it. Carol and Jim. I smoothed my hair with my hands and tried to compose myself. And slowly, I walked out to the door. And for a moment, I was struck with panic. Suppose they'd heard. What if one of the doctors had called them from the banquet and warned them? But no. Carol came to the door.
Why, John, I thought you were at the dinner at the...
Yes, I was. May I come in? I must see Jim for a moment. It's urgent.
Why, of course.
Who is it, Carol?
It's John, dear. He wants to see you.
Oh, be right out. Half a minute.
Why, well, sit down, John. You look as white as a sheet.
No, I won't sit down.
What? Well, what's so important at this hour, John? We don't keep doctor's hours, you know.
John, what are you doing?
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with this week's guest, Trevor Howard.
You know, the month of September is almost here, and that means autumn on its way again. It won't be too long before these summer days will give way to falling leaves, school books, and the exciting spectacle of college football. Just about everyone in the country has the football fever in the fall, and here at NBC, we're no exception. In fact, beginning September 18th, that's a few Saturdays away, NBC will bring you complete coverage of the top college football game of the week. Direct from the home team's stadium, you'll hear every bit of the color and attention that accompany the clash of two high-powered teams. It's NBC's direct report to you of the autumn gridiron spectacle, beginning Saturday afternoon, September 18th. And speaking of sports, NBC also brings you the Friday night favorite Cavalcade of Sports, beginning September 3rd. That's a week from this Friday. On Cavalcade of Sports, you'll hear Don Dunphy bring you a blow-by-blow account of the week's best boxing match, direct from ringside. And now, let's leave the sports scene for a moment and talk about some other fall favorites NBC is preparing for you. The exciting account of the newspaper world, Big Story, to be heard on Wednesday nights, beginning September 8th. And there's Lux Radio Theater, radio's greatest dramatic show. And you'll hear it regularly, beginning Tuesday, September 14th. The first Lux Radio Theater presentation, incidentally, is Wuthering Heights, starring Merle Oberon. There's Quiz Fun, too, with Walk a Mile, a Wednesday evening show starring Bill Cullen, which you'll hear very soon now, to be exact, next Wednesday. So don't forget NBC's big plans for you next month. College football, cavalcade of sports, Lux Radio Theater, and many more.
And now we continue Theater Royal with this week's guest, Trevor Howard.
Yes, I shot and killed Jim Foster. His wife, Carol, just stood there screaming, and then she fainted. What did I do? Let me see if I can remember. I looked at Jim, lying there crumpled at my feet. He was quite dead. He'd almost have to be with five bullets in his heart. I walked over and examined Carol, and her pulse was fast but regular. For a moment, I was afraid the shock might have killed her, too. Then I became conscious of a smoking revolver in my hand. I dropped it like a hot coal. Then I sat down. I don't know how long I sat there. That vast mechanism inside the thing we call the brain was working excitedly. Later, some neighbors came in. They found us there. Carol and Jim on the floor and me sitting in a chair mumbling to myself. They took me away. Yes, they took me to the police station. They put me in a psychopathic ward. And the humor of it struck me at the time that I, John Farrington, the eminent psychiatrist, the one man generally recognized as being an authority on psychosis, locked up in the psychopathic ward of the county jail. And then they sent for Dr. Sebo to examine me. And poor old doddering Sebo. He'd been in a class of mine for postgraduate work. He was the county psychiatrist. The knowledge of what he had to do made him nervous, almost afraid.
Sure, you'll be all right, Doctor.
He said nothing's
a
proof
cake.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, I'll be all right, thank you.
Now, just wait
outside.
Okay, sir.
Hello, Farrington.
Oh, Sebo, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I don't quite know how to begin.
Well, it's all right. They've told me what I did.
You have no recollection of your actions?
None, whatever.
Farrington, there's no use beating about the bush. I'm not half as qualified to diagnose your case as you are yourself. What made you do it?
Well, I don't know. Carol and Jim were my best friends. Something went wrong, of course, up here. Only I knew.
Mrs. Foster tells us that a few weeks ago you told her you were in love with her. You remember that?
Well, yes, I've always been in love with Carol. It's not what you think. I wouldn't kill Jim for her.
Many men have killed for love.
Yes, of course, but they were either premeditated murders or killings born of a sudden passion. In my case...
I'm amazed at your cool analysis of this.
Well, it's just that I'm trying to fathom myself. How could I, a man who's always been as sane as... Well, as normal as it's possible to be, suddenly... How is Carol? She must hate me.
No, I don't think so. You see, Farrington... Everyone's convinced that you're ill, that you didn't know what you were doing. They believe you're dangerous to society and yourself. You might suffer another of these attacks.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Sebo?
Yes?
Do you think Carol would come to see me?
I'll ask her. It might be good if she did.
Well, yes, I'm sure it would. You see, I must explain to her. I must try to make her understand. Ask her, Sebo. Tell her she needn't be afraid to come. I won't harm her.
I'm quite sure of that, Farrington.
Yes, I'll keep a guard in the room, just in case I should, begin to feel strangely.
You won't feel strangely, Farrington.
Well, how can you be sure?
Intuition. I'm not the psychiatrist you are, but I don't quite agree with everyone's opinion about you.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't believe there's anything wrong with you. You're faking, Farrington. The whole thing's a gigantic plot.
Plot?
You're no more ill than I am.
I wish I could believe you.
I think it far more important that when you come to trial, the jury believes me.
Sebo, the one unknown quantity. The one thing I hadn't counted on. And Sebo, of all people. Oh, he was all right as a doctor. He could take out an appendix and prescribe for backache. But he was a child in psychiatric matters compared to me. Was he going to try to outthink me? His brain against mine? I, who knew more about the working of the human mind than any man alive? Why, I think if I'd tried, really tried, I could have convinced Sebo that he was mentally ill.
Nevertheless, he advanced his theory to the district attorney and convinced him that it was worth a try. So they brought me to trial. The witnesses for the state sounded more like the witnesses for the defense.
Your name is Edith Cartwright?
Yes.
You're a nurse at All Saints Hospital?
Yes, I am.
State the type of work you're engaged in.
I handle psychopathic cases.
You know the defendant?
Dr. Farrington, of course. I worked with him every day.
In your opinion, is Dr. Farrington a capable psychiatrist?
I would say that he was. He's been badly overworked. His memory began to go back on him several weeks ago. He loaned me his treatise to read, and the following day he came in and asked me if I knew where it was.
Your name, sir?
Dr. Bradley Newmark.
You are on the staff of All Saints Hospital?
I am.
In your opinion, Doctor, did the defendant show signs of mental derangements prior to the night of September 3rd?
In my opinion, Dr. Farrington had worked himself into a psychopathic state and was not responsible for his actions for several weeks prior to the date you mentioned.
But have you any specific examples to give the court?
Several. The first was on an occasion when we met and had a long chat. The next day, Dr. Farrington seemed to have no recollection of it whatsoever.
Following a conversation with Dr. Newmark in which he suggested that I should try and persuade Dr. Farrington to take it easy, I spoke to him myself. He became quite excited. He told me that he was in the middle of a great experiment.
Did you consider his reaction normal?
His reaction was that of a sick man.
And how did the interview end?
He told me to go to the devil.
My name's Dr. Henley, Carl Henley. In my opinion, this entire trial is a farce, a travesty on justice. John Farrington's ill, terribly ill. If he weren't, he never could have committed this crime. He should be placed in our finest sanatorium and treated. Any man who has contributed to the field of science as he has...
Yes, thank you, Doctor. But we're not interested in your personal thoughts regarding the defendant. Have you any reason for your professional opinion?
The Medical Society attended Dr. Farrington a testimonial dinner on the night of September the 3rd. On that occasion, in the middle of his speech, he suddenly began pounding on...
One by one, they paraded past the witness stand. It was a joke to hear them give their expert opinions. Everything was going exactly according to my plan. Finally, it came to Sebo's turn. I took renewed interest in the proceedings. Would they believe Newmark and Henley and Miss Cartwright? Or would Sebo's testimony make them doubt?
You are Dr. Ralph Sebo?
Yes, sir.
You're the psychiatrist employed by the county?
That's right.
You've examined the defendant?
I have.
In your opinion, then, Doctor, what is the condition of John Farrington's mind?
John Farrington is as sane as you are.
As sane as you are? Well, that's almost a moot question. By the time the end of the trial was reached, I think most of the jurors, the judge, the lawyers, and a good percentage of the spectators were beginning to doubt their own senses. You see, for weeks they'd had so much about psychosis hammered into their minds, they began to think about what goes on inside the brain. It can sometimes be dangerous to think too much about the mind. Finally, at great length, the trial was over, and the jury filed back into the box and prepared to render its verdict.
We, the jury, find that the defendant, John Farrington, did shoot and kill James Foster, but cannot be held responsible by reasons of insanity. We recommend that he be confined in a sanatorium until such time
as... And so here I am now. It's a nice sanatorium, fine doctors. They use many of my own methods. I think they'll consider it a particularly fitting triumph when they find that they've succeeded in curing me with treatments that I've used and discovered. Now, remember, I told you I didn't know the ending of the story. I don't know it, because it's only just now going to happen. I'm ready now to gain my freedom. Little by little, just as I plan my actions to convince them of my illness,
I've been planning them now to convince them of my full and complete cure. It hasn't been at all bad here. Just a few months of rest, which I badly needed anyway. A small price to pay for killing a man and for getting a wife who couldn't have become mine any other way. Carol should be here at any moment. She's been coming regularly to see me. She doesn't hate me for killing Jim. As a matter of fact, I believe she's beginning to fall in love with me.
Hello, John.
Carol, you look ravishing. You're more beautiful every time I see you.
You're looking better, too, John. Any attacks lately?
No, none in weeks now. Carol.
Yes?
When they tell me that I'm all right again, do you suppose you could find it in your heart? Oh, it's so difficult for me to put into words.
I understand, John. You know that next to Jim, I always loved you best.
Carol.
I must go now, John. They don't want me to tire you. I'll come again in a few days.
Carol, darling, I'll have to get well quickly so we can be together always.
Yes, John. Just as soon as you're completely well.
Come in.
Well, good morning, John.
Hello, Newmark. Nice of you to drop in.
You seem to be getting on splendidly. I see they put you in a regular room now. Mm. No more bars on the door, eh?
No, and I hope to be leaving altogether soon.
Oh, I'm sure you will. You're looking better all the time. You've got that old fire back in your eyes. Mm. Well, I'll drop down again soon.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Hello, Farrington.
Henley, it's nice to see you.
Ah, good to see you looking so well. They tell me you'll be going home tomorrow.
Yes, can't tell you how grateful I am.
Nothing to be grateful for, Dr. Farrington. After all, it was your treatment that cured you. Now you'll be able to carry on just where you left off.
It will be wonderful to get back to work again.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Oh, by the way, Miss Cartwright sends her greetings.
Oh, thank you. I'll see you at the hospital.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, Farrington.
Huh?
It's me, Farrington. Sibo. You remember me, don't you?
Oh, yes. Sibo. I'm all right, Sibo. I'm all right. You've got to make them understand I'm well. I'm not crazy, I'm well. They're going to let me go home. They've taken the bars away, Sibo. Sibo, tell them.
Taken the bars away?
Sibo, I'll tell you a secret. You remember that time you came to see me in the jail?
Yes, of course, sir. Do you remember?
Well, certainly, I remember. There's nothing wrong with me, I tell you. But, Sibo, you were right. I was faking. I was faking all the time. I wasn't deranged, but I fooled them. Didn't I, Sibo? I fooled them all but you.
Yes, you fooled them, John.
And now I'm going home. They've all told me so. Newmark, Henley, Miss Cartwright, and Carol. Carol comes every day, you know. We're going to be married.
I see. Well, I must be running along now. I'll be back tomorrow.
No, Sibo, don't leave me here. Don't leave me. I'm going home. They said so. Don't leave me, Sibo. I'm all right. There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me.
Well, Sibo.
Hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. I thought in the beginning he might be faking, but I was wrong. He imagines you visit him, and Henley, and Mrs. Foster. He thinks she comes to see him every day. He thinks he's going home, and he says we've taken the bars off the door.
Sibo! Sibo, I'm going home! I'm going home! No bars on the door! No bars! No bars! Sibo, let me out of here! I'm sane, I tell you. I'm as sane as you are.
I would like to extend my thanks this week to Trevor Howard, whom you've just heard in the role of John Farrington in The Judgment. As usual, too, I'm sure you'd like me to express your appreciation to our excellent supporting cast. In next week's program, I myself shall have the pleasure of appearing for you in a story of my own choice, when I hope to have the pleasure of your company. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.